Everyone has a fave Wendy's Frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new Frosty Swirls and Frosty Fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo Brownie Fusion, Pop-Tarts Strawberry Fusion, Strawberry Swirl, Brownie Batter Swirl, Caramel Swirl, and Caramel Crunch Fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to Frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC. Used with permission.
Welcome to the Lorehounds podcast. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to psycho history. I'm John.
And I'm Marilyn. This is our coverage of Foundation on Apple TV Plus, Season 3, Episode 2, Shadows in the Math. If you want to get in contact with us, send an email to empire@thelorehounds.com or head to our Discord server from the link tree in the show notes.
And if you like what you've heard and you want to support us or get ad-free and bonus content, check out the same link tree in our show notes for our Patreon and Supercast subscription options. Marilyn.
John.
We're back. We're back with another episode. I didn't watch ahead this time, so now I can really speculate.
I didn't either.
Very good. Well, you were good both times.
I'm only good this time. You're always good, John. Don't worry about it.
Tell me about your thoughts on this episode.
Well, I noticed a lot more book references in this one, which I found very interesting. Now, maybe it's just because I've been recently rereading them, so more is familiar to me, but they seem to be hewing closer to the storylines than they were in, of course, season one. They had to set up all the new stuff they were doing. Mm-hmm. But now it's very interesting to see what they're keeping and what they're altering of what they're keeping and how they're altering it. I really like it, but I realize there may be some people that are not happy with it. So we'll see.
That's interesting. You know, I'm reading Foundation and Empire right now, and I just got to the part where the Yule section starts and Beta's introduced and all that. So
yeah.
I'm starting, I think by next week, by the time we record next, I think I'll be able to talk more fully about Foundation and Empire.
Yeah. Well, that is, of course, where a lot of this is picking up from now. So
that's
perfect.
So we're focused on part two because it's the book split up into two. Part two of Foundation and Empire is really the focus of this season, it seems like.
Seems that way. Yeah. Does
very
definitely.
Cool. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, such creativity still. It's just really so fun to see the things they come up with. Although there's one or two that I have caveats with, which I will mention in the following program. And I love the little conundrum they present us. So I have to ask you, John, did you see the missing belly button?
I did not.
We'll come to it.
Yeah, bring it up when it comes up in the plot.
I will definitely do that. Yeah, they're doing a really good job, I think, with handling the multiple threads. You know, they have like three or four different plot lines running mm-hmm. at once. And so far, I've liked where they've transitioned. I've liked how they've woven things in. And again, it'll be interesting to see how they continue to weave these things together. Although, again, in this episode, there is one significant piece of evidence of that at the very end, which we'll talk about when we get there.
Yeah.
And it was a rather unexpected development to me, but from a book perspective, it was kind of satisfying.
You're talking about the ending, right?
Yeah. So, what about you?
Yeah, I too was really taken by surprise with that ending. I'm really liking the mule. He is a very interesting character. I know you didn't like the brutality of him in the first one, and I can agree it was a little much, but I think in this episode it really showed that, like, one, he's not going to just waste people for no reason, right? And in general, maybe in the first episode he did.
But I think you could make a case that he did, yes.
But he's really interesting the way here he shows, like, I don't want to expend all this effort, and I don't have to. Mm-hmm. I can make you feel like you're part of this, right? And this is something that fascist regimes do all the time. It's also something that abusive partners do, right?
Oh,
is try to make you
absolutely.
Get your hands dirty so that you feel like you're in cahoots. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
You're culpable now.
Which is probably one of the reasons why I dislike it so intensely.
But it's good writing, right? Like, it's so well written.
It's written well, but it's a horrible concept, and you know, I'll stand by that. But we'll talk.
He's about a villain.
Well, we wait till we get to this point because I do have some things to say.
Period. Okay. All right. Fair enough. I'm very curious as to what's happening with Harry and Kale, especially because
yes,
I have no idea. Like, that feels like the most outlandish thing right now.
Out of
and I want to know what's happening.
For sure.
Very interesting what's happening there.
For sure.
I really like the politicking between the different Empire characters. I like that all of them are not one-dimensional. All of them have these different facets. Like, Dusk has this kindly conciliator, and yet the conciliator is building a bomb that's going to the Death Star, basically. Like, come on. All right, it's the Death Star. Can we just be honest about that?
Thank you. Thank you.
It's a little bit of a ripoff, but that's all right. How many weapons like that can you have, right? And Day, I thought, was really humanized in this episode. You know, the way he really shows empathy towards his friend in that moment and says, you know, I wish there was something I could do. Even Empire. And this is something that happens in the books that doesn't happen in the show, is that there's like a sickly Cleon, right? And the sickly Cleon, they make the point, Asimov makes the point, like, even Empire, even an emperor has to deal with illness. Can't, you know, an emperor can be all powerful and yet be ill. And this is Empire here saying, I wish there was something I could do about your daughter here. I like that in the gambling scene.
Okay, you have to bring that up. Oh, yes.
Where he's talking to his friend in the gambling scene.
Now.
Yeah.
I'm with you now. Yeah.
And also the way that he won't lengthen Dusk's time, right? He's like, I can't stop us from degenerating sooner.
Yeah, no, that was pretty dramatic, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought that was very dramatic, but also I think interesting that he made, honestly, probably the wisest choice based on this worldview and didn't go for the easy way out, right?
Right, no, and it also gave me some entirely new insight in what it's like to live within the bodies of this, whatever you want to call it, you know, this clone existence.
And I think last season it really emphasized how much the clones are really just puppets of Demerzel, and they know that now.
Oh, yeah, and that comes up very clearly in this episode, doesn't it?
Right. Anyway, I'm just really liking all this stuff. I'm not sure how I feel about Gale on the Second Foundation right now. That seems to be the shakiest plot line for me.
Yeah, but I think
we'll get there. We'll get there.
They're making it out of almost entirely whole cloth. So
yeah, I just don't know what's going on there. It could end up being good. I just don't have enough there yet to tell.
Sure. No, I think as with the previous two seasons, they're much more focused on Empire, and to some degree, it's easier to focus on Empire because the things that make the Second Foundation are more difficult to convey in a visual medium.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about from the books, most of what we get about the Second Foundation, it's all mind-to-mind communication.
Well, I don't know much about the Second Foundation, but I guess will. We'll let's stay away from the book spoilers for now.
Fair enough.
I will tell you, I was talking to Alicia because she has access to the screeners too, in case she needs to sub in.
Good.
She watched the first episode and she was saying how she last season didn't like she didn't like season two as much as season one because she felt like all the plot lines were a lot more separate, you know, not converging into one location. And I don't know if I agree with that critique, but that's her critique. And I thought to myself, like, I think it's actually going to converge really well in this season. This seems to be all melding into one climax.
I agree. And again, the Nexus being the Mule.
Right. The Mule. And I really like that the Mule is not a crisis, that the Mule is something unto itself. Right.
An aberration.
Right. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't we get right into the episode then?
Let's do it.
50 years ago on Ignis, the Second Foundation awakens Gale and Harry. The two leaders decide to split the Foundation into two teams, one to help overcome the third crisis and the other to defeat the Mule. Needing more time awake to train the Mentalics, Harry remains awake while Gale is put back into cryosleep. So old man Harry's coming up, but for now, what do you think about this? Did Harry make the right call to sacrifice himself so that Gale could live?
Well, we'll find out, won't we?
I guess so.
I can certainly see why he did it. And, you know, because this is so completely different from what we get from the books themselves, it's entirely
right.
Goyer and the showrunner's game to win or to lose. So I'm just following along and I'm really interested to see how are they going to handle this. I loved all the ritual elements of the Awakenings, which won't surprise you and probably won't surprise listeners who've heard me before.
Right. You do host a podcast about that.
I do host a podcast about rituals, although it's in the context of the Rings of Power. So seeing the first Awakenings was an excellent way of showing how stark that third Awakening was when there are only two people left to greet the sleeper. But the language they used, awakened sleeper, the first speaker welcomes you. It brought tears to my eyes because first speaker, and suddenly I'm back in the books again, remembering who and what the first speaker was. So I like the way they're using the terminology from the book series. They're making it into something very different. You know, the second foundation welcomes you and they all kneel. That's a little awkward, but it also is interesting because the show points out that it mirrors what the first foundation went through.
Yeah.
Because this next awakening, and they kneel, Gale's response is, our religious phase is over. You know, no more kneeling.
Right.
So again, it's a nod to the books because there was that whole sequence of, you know, this phase and then this phase and then this phase.
Which is interesting. They're much less aware of that in the show. In the books, they're like, there's characters at least who are like, hey, we did. And Harry Seldon's, you know, recordings will come out and be like, hey, it seems like you moved past the religious phase and now you're right in the economic stage.
Right.
And we don't do that in the show. And I think it's better that way. I actually think it's a big improvement to have it more naturally go.
Well, they do it a little bit because in the second series, when Harry meets Brother Constant for the first time, he says, I see the religious phase is in full swing. So they're alluding to it.
Yeah.
But they're not making a meal out of it, which is nice.
You're right. I forgot about that part.
It fits this series better, I think, to be doing it in that more subtle kind of way. So that those of us who know can be, oh, yes, of course, this is great. And it doesn't sound odd or off for the people for whom this is all new.
Right.
I found it interesting that they plan to look for other Mentallics in the galaxy again. Definitely not what happens in the book series, but I think it works well the way they've set this up, and to place observers all over the galaxy. And I have a thought about that, which we'll come to later. I've been confused at first by the time frame. You know, wait, where are we? What? You know, I felt like I was just waking up. Oh, what's going on? What day is it? What do I have to do today? And the narration was pretty good at keeping us clear if we were 1 year after they slept, or now it's 152 years later, and so on and so on.
Right.
Yeah. And as far as Harry, well, we can talk about that because we have a next section to go to.
Right. Why don't I just introduce that and we can talk about it as a whole?
Go for it.
So 4 years before the start of this season, Gale awakens from cryosleep. She discovers an elderly Harry who has sacrificed his remaining years to give the Second Foundation a chance against the upcoming threats. He tells Gale she threw the plan off by surviving, but got everything back on track. He says, if the mule is defeated, everything is heading towards the Invictus. So there's something.
Yeah.
We also learned there will be 8 crises in total. That's something that I don't think was stated before now.
No, I've never heard that before, in either version of the story.
That night, Harry is visited by Kale, who refuses him a new body, but brings him through a portal to find out who wanted him to have skin in the game. Gale sleeps again until the present and awakens in time to face the mule. Preem shows her the new inflection point. Mm-hmm. So a lot here, but I mean, first of all, why don't we go to Harry, the statue carver, the sculptor, I should say. The trainer of Mentallics, like he really made a name for himself, right? Oh, you'll like Preem. I like how he goes, here's my new guy for you.
I do too.
Yeah.
And he's right. I like Prem. I like him very much.
Yeah, seems like a solid dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as soon as we were told that Harry was going to stay awake while Gale went to sleep, I had a feeling that he wouldn't be around much longer.
Which is fascinating because I really hope they do something more interesting than just kill him off. Because we did spend a whole season getting him a new body and confirming that he's human. Yes. And it would feel really disappointing to me to then have him disappear from this foundation completely.
Well, we're told, Kali tells him, when he asks her for a reprieve, she says that this current body of his was his reprieve.
Right.
So,
but then she brings him through the portal. So what is happening here? I feel like there's something else going on.
Well, as you said in your summary, she takes him through the portal to find out who wanted him to have skin in the game, who wanted him to be able to exist right. as long as he did and be reborn and all this stuff, or reconstituted, right. whatever you want to call it.
And what is, it seems like magic, right? Like this is the closest the show feels like magic.
Interesting. I was again thinking of very, very strong mysticism.
Yeah. What else could this thing be but like a godlike figure, right? Even if it's not, quote unquote God, like
I know
it's clearly as some kind of being with powers beyond anything anyone imagines right now.
Well, a being who sees very broadly
and can resurrect a human being.
I mean, maybe she takes him in front of a mirror and he looks at himself and said, "Oh, I guess it was me all along." There's another possibility, but the image of entering a portal, crossing a threshold, passing through the veil, all common images of death.
Yeah.
And for many cultures, religious and otherwise, a symbol for being reborn into a new way of being. So,
right. But also, she makes very clear that he's not dying, right? Because she basically says, like, it'd be very honorable to die here and be done with it. But then she takes him to this portal. So it's very clear that that's not what's happening. It's not metaphorical. This is a portal that he just went through.
Good point. No, you've watched it more carefully than I have. And it's been a while since I watched it anyway. But I'm suffering from the absence of subtitles, I'll have to say.
They, I don't know what it is, but I was able to turn them on today.
Really?
You gotta look. And try again. We'll talk off air. But yeah. I think there are actually in these screeners subtitles.
So, you give me hope that, yes, they will keep this Harry, because I do like him better than the Valtteri, I got to say.
Yeah. He seems, like you said, like we're talking about, he has skin in the game, right? And so it gives him more heart, where the other Harry feels like some kind of chess player treating humans as pieces.
Well, and also the fact that he turns to sculpting, to me, that's a very human occupation, creating art.
Himself, too.
Of himself. Well, but of course. But creating art. From within yourself and so forth, it's not something that a computer can do. A computer can regenerate, but original creation, as it were, is, I think, a sign of humanity of some kind. I've loved watching his relationship with Gale develop over time and, have some pretty high highs and some pretty intense lows, but throughout it, I think they've always known how much they need each other.
Yeah.
And now Gale's going to be there all by herself. But I also was very interested that the way they account for the changes in this iteration of the story is that Ra's and Gale's actions brought about a change to the plan. But Gale's being there with the Second Foundation was an unexpected event that is seen to be essential for the safe conclusion of the plan. Right. So cause and effect kind of out the window here to some degree. Although the fault in the fabric or whatever was the very thing that brought about its mending again. There is some religious image of that. Oh, the stone that the builders rejected became the chief cornerstone. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I think last episode I compared it to the Wheel of Time, the pattern of the major events will happen. And it's the same thing in Tolkien writes Bibimi. The same thing will happen with the major events. It just depends who does it, who's involved.
And
that's why, they repeat this a million times in the book to the point where it's exhausting of like a single individual is not going to change the main plan, right? Of Harry Seldon's crises.
Right.
But it depends how it will happen.
And the plan cannot happen without individual actions, even right. though right. the mathematics of it is based upon the actions of multitudes. Yet that doesn't necessarily have to mean that the accomplishment of it does not depend on individual humans. Maybe mm-hmm. not this particular one, but some one particular human will develop in a certain way, again, based upon large numbers, perhaps.
Right. It's also true that Gail and Harry were able to stretch their influence by using the cryosleep to train generations.
Absolutely. And so when you have, you know, a society that has been for generations trained in the same pattern, which again is not dissimilar to what happens in the books. It's just that the same people aren't training them, you know, right. throughout 152 years or whatever it's been. I really liked the segue that they gave us from the Second Foundation to the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they, Gail and Harry, and watching what I've taken to calling the mule tail, this fuzzy thing, you know, kind of staticking out in the prime radiant predictions right. model. So I like that they focus on that. And then next thing you know, we're in the new section where they're also focusing on the mule tail. So
nobody's happy about it, huh?
I can't understand why they would be. So, yeah.
You know, I have one last thing to ask you about this scene. Why sure was there thing. No statue of Markley? We know he was integral to last season, according to David. So why no statue of Markley?
Wasn't Markley entirely in the Empire?
Yeah, I'm just joking around.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
I'm just joking around. I'm just.
You're yanking the chain, John. You got me.
This was just that David Goyer came on our show to tell us how wrong
I remember. The character. I listened with delight.
It was great. Go back and listen to the interview if you missed it.
Yes, do. It's delightful, and he's delightful.
It, you know, something that I think about, I'm thinking about this whole season because of that interview. And this is why, you know, I joke about it, but it was actually a really thoughtful interview he gave us. And I'm really grateful that he came on to explain his thought process and a lot of things. Absolutely. He said that he had different off ramps for the series, right? Depending yes. on when it gets canceled.
I was thinking about that the other day.
And the first off ramp is season 3.
Oh, was it season 3? I thought it was season 4.
I think it's 3, 5, 8.
Okay. I'm sure you listened to it more than I did. So.
Well, I haven't listened to it in a while, so I could be wrong. But there's a transcript of it. I should probably look it up. But I think that that's really interesting because I think we're going toward a really satisfying conclusion here, whether it gets renewed or not. And I think it will get renewed because we did just get a new showrunner, didn't we? They just announced that.
I didn't see that, but I'm sure.
Okay, well, they did. They did for season 4.
I trust you. I trust you. And I could see them. I mean, they put all the pieces in place so that if they really, truly did the horrible thing of denying them a season 4, there could be a fairly reasonable wrap-up. You know, there is an off-ramp. I really hope they don't do that.
I hope so, too, and I don't think they're going to, but I like the idea that there is an off-ramp here.
Yes.
Because I think it will be a very satisfying finale.
Well, it's you know, it's like having airbags or seatbelts or... <you know. laughs> You know there's a backup plan if you need it.
Right, exactly.
If there is a loss of oxygen, your oxygen mask will drop down from the ceiling. If there is a loss of season 4, your conclusion will drop in from the last episode. I'm sorry. I'm just being silly.
All right, well, we are going to drop out of our plane right now to take a quick break.
Hey everyone, David here. Wanted to tell you about a company that makes some really beautiful Middle Earth-inspired products. Actually, I wish I had discovered OSHA slings when my daughter was little and I was using a lot of different baby slings and carriers. They sent me one of their Ancients of Gondor Ithildin baby carriers. Honestly, the design of this carrier is cool as hell. The quality is impeccable. It's a really smart design and super easy to use. I wish I had this when I needed it. I would have loved to show off my dad nerd cred at the time. But they also sent me a really nice blanket, the Misty Mountains Throw. And now that same daughter, she monopolizes it whenever she's on the couch. It's beautiful, just the right weight. It's brushed cotton, so it's breathable and keeps us really cozy. We've been having a lot of cold weather lately, so we're always fighting over who gets to use it. A little about OSHA. They're a family-owned Scottish company. They've been handcrafting products since about 2010. Everything's ethically sourced and made in their solar-powered workshop. Check out their website. They've got a bunch of information about their sustainability practices. That's something that's really important to me. And they have this huge line of official Lord of the Rings products. They're making baby carriers, throws, scarves, mugs, tea towels, and the designs are stunning. Like, go check out the website right now. There's a link in the show notes. New customers get 10% off with the code LOREHOUNDS. Go to OSHASlings.com.
First, there was Tuesday. Then there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, aka Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
On Trantor, Demerzel and the Cleons observe the inflection point, which she tells them is not fixable with psychohistory. Day plays the nihilist, and Dusk pleads for his life, which ends in 10 days. Demerzel tells him she has no agency in it. Later, Day gambles with his family heirlooms. He confesses to Song that the end of the dynasty is coming soon and says he wants to go with her to Mycogen. I think I'm saying that right.
Looks good to
Dusk,
me.
Dusk apologizes to Day and asks him to extend the lifetime of Dusk's, as the previous day had shortened it due to earlier waning.
Yeah, something just occurred to me. This is where Demerzel just becomes this fascinating nexus. She says that it's not fixable with psychohistory. Psychohistory is profoundly mathematically based. A computer could generate out all possible whatevers and come to that conclusion. But can she, as a positronic robot, include this unpredictable human side? Mm. Already this crisis has happened because of an unpredictable event. You know, a sport, or if you will, which is what the genetic difference is often called, you know, just this genetically completely unexpected human being. Is not the opposite also true? That there could be, you know, a common everyday human being who would also, just by this one individual choice, manage to save it all. And because she is not able to calculate for that or keep that in account, she's making this absolute prediction.
I think that's exactly right, though. I think you're proving her point, is that psychohistory would say the whole movement has to be working against this threat. But she's saying the movement's not doing anything about this. This is going right towards the third crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, we need an ordinary person, or perhaps a group of super people like the Mentalics, to come in and defeat the villain, right? Defeat this aberration.
Mm. Well, I have to be careful what I say here, because I know what happens in the third novel. I know how it is worked out. I'm not at all sure that that's how they're going to do it here for a variety of reasons. But I still think, because of the way they're showing this contrasting idea of, you know, Demerzel, the positronic robot who tears open her chest to store the prime radiant, and Demerzel, the being who needs to consult with a priestess because she's having an existential crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that many robots that have existential crises. I certainly that's know true. Humans who do.
I mean, in the Asimov novels, every robot who witnesses a violent act kind of has an existential crisis.
I suppose. I have not read any of the robot novels.
Okay,
so
yeah.
You have more knowledge early of that ones, part than I do.
Basically, anytime they witness a human being come to like severe harm, their brain just breaks. They're like, we just can't do it. You can maybe rehabilitate them, but yeah, that's they actually do have these crises themselves.
Well, I guess that's what she might have been referring to in episode one.
Although she seems to slice people in half pretty easily.
Indeed, she does. Well, but see, her programming had been rewritten.
Right, right. Only one rule now.
Right. instead of all the three, and you know, the greater good piece and all the rest of it.
Right.
So, yeah, I love that phrase. Something has cast shadows in the math, which again says, okay, the math is what I know, yet there is something that has managed to derail it. Well, that can't be more math, can it? It's got to be some other kind of influence, human or otherwise.
It's true. You know, when I was in high school, I remember those TI-83s, they didn't have light-up screens. So you need light. You can't have a shadow in the room.
There you go. Are the shadows, this is speculation now, more questions. Are those shadows in the math the result of the mule? Are they possibly shadows of the members of the Second Foundation who are expanding throughout the galaxy? And could that also be the shadow of Gale herself? So it this is the beauty of this whole thing. It's not just the mathematics.
Right.
It's more than that. And it does, in the end of the day, take human creativity to help the math along, if you will.
That's really interesting. I hadn't considered it was Gale, and I really like that. Mm-hmm. The idea that, because Harry goes on this whole thing of like, oh, you threw the whole plan off and you brought it back. But
right.
What if she didn't bring it back? What if it was back on track for a while, but her presence is now too much for the system?
That's certainly possible.
And the fact that she trained this army of, you know, that she's become Professor X for the X-Men, maybe that's too much for the system, right? Like this network of mentalics has just warped everything.
Well, let's be fair. It was Harry who trained them by and large.
That's true. That's true. Although it seems like they did 100 years together, I think. They did 100 years.
They did some together.
Of a few weeks a year. And then Harry did 50 years by himself, which did Harry at that age have 50 years left? Like what? Or did he go to sleep at some point? I don't know.
The implication I took from it was he stayed awake for those 52 years.
I think that's right, too.
He used up the rest of his remaining lifespan, as it were.
Right.
Not that it's calculated out to the, you know, to the month and the day, but
right.
He used up the rest of his mana, if you like.
right.
So none of that was going to work. The sentence from Day, this toy obeyed that toy. Meaning Demerzel obeyed the Prime Radiant.
He's so sassy. I love this.
Brilliant.
Pace. Yeah.
Just the brilliant summation of the whole thing in a way, as you say, sassy. Absolutely to the point, and wow, what a zinger that just goes right in. Both language and image. Just stunning. And then Demerzel comes back with, I am the clock for every Cleon's life. Time I keep is exact. Ba-dum, boom.
I love it.
Mic drop.
You know, it goes back to what I was saying in our hot takes, is that this Day, in the first episode, he kind of seems silly and without much depth, like very valid.
Oh, yeah.
In this episode, we see that he's not that, right? He is drowning his sorrows, for sure.
Right. Yes, yes.
But he is still sharp as a tack when he wants to be.
That's true. Well, again, you know, he, to some degree, cloned all the little nanobots that prevent him from completely deteriorating, maybe, until the time has come.
He's extremely smart. He's extremely perceptive. He's extremely empathetic in a way that I don't think any of the other, either Dusk or Dawn are. I don't think Dawn is empathetic. I think Dawn is calculating and is smart and is charming. But I don't think he's empathetic.
I think he's all of those things. And I think he does have a certain degree of compassion.
I haven't seen it yet.
Really?
I think he can play compassion.
I mean, that's, you know.
Because who has he been compassionate towards?
Dusk.
That's himself, though, right?
I don't know. I'm not sure he feels that way.
I don't know.
Because Dusk and Day are so diametrically opposed at this point, it's all the more easy to see them as three individuals. And as we know, the genetic drift has been so massive at this point that they're not all eating at the same time. You know, they're not doing all those similar gestures in chorus. They're no longer trying to present as one coherent whole.
Right. That's interesting. I don't know. I haven't seen, at least for like the little people or for humanity as a whole, I haven't seen a lot of compassion for Don. I have seen him be concerned that his reign will end. But I, and that's different from, and he even makes clear, he says, you know, I'm not concerned for the people of Calgon. I'm concerned about a threat to the rule here. And I don't know if that's for show.
Did he say a threat to the galaxy?
I don't remember, but
Empire, which could be interpreted both ways.
Right.
I'm concerned with threats to Empire, i.e. the survival of this massive construct of human beings and planets versus, you know, these three clone beings who are really one supposedly, but not anymore. I'm sorry.
Right.
There's just been too much genetic drift. They are as individual as they can be.
Right.
I think. It's also, I thought, you know, observing all this, I'm thinking, well, okay, it's not much good to ask a robot for a repeave any more than it is to ask Kali for one, you know, in their different ways. You know, they're being, you know, strict to some kind of timetable or inner compulsion or whatever it happens to be. So the necessity. Yeah, well, there's a distinction there. I'm not afraid of dying, but. I mean, I'm not afraid of being dead, but I'm not looking forward to the process.
Doesn't sound very fun, does it?
Well, it all depends on how. There's all so many different ways, but I think we're drifting, if not genetically now at this point, off the course of things. And then, you know, when Dusk asks Day to adjust the thread, meaning to change the time of ascension procedure that is coming, you know, basically let him extend his life beyond the 10 days. Day's demonstration that such a request is impossible, he slits his arm from the wrist to the elbow and watched the nanobots heal himself, thus proving the reality of their artificiality.
Ooh, you're rhyming.
I know, isn't that clever?
I like it.
The fact that they have these inner perceptions of themselves, I think, now as individuals. But they are still these artificial constructs. But they certainly don't have what one might call a full human experience. But they're feeling more and more human on the inside. And this is where my belly button joke came in. There's one scene in particular where it is shown beyond shadow of a doubt, because of where his loincloth has slipped to, that Day does not have a belly button.
I don't doubt it. They have a good attention to detail with that kind of thing in this show.
Right. Well, and some of the, you know, stories that came out before the first episode drop talked about the belly button. So it was kind of on my radar anyway.
All these little
hints of, we can react to them as human beings and characters and all this other stuff. And then we get these zingers of reminders that I can't slip my arm from wrist to elbow and survive. And I have a belly button. So, you know.
That's interesting. I honestly took the nano thing as more of an evolution of the personal shields, because that was a big deal last season. Empire was really mad that Foundation had personal shields as well as Empire. And here we have a thing beyond that, which is you can hurt me all you want, but the nanobites are going to heal me.
Well, see, I thought I remembered from season two that one of the whole intentions of the kidnapping of Dawn by that underground rebellion group was to get his blood so that they could incorporate his nanobots into themselves. So listeners, write in if I got that completely wrong. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm misremembering things. That's pretty firm in my mind, and I don't think it's something I could make up myself, but who knows?
Okay. Well, I'm really enjoying the development of all of the Empire brothers, I should say. All the Empire brothers in this season. I like this development with Song, because it reminds us that there was this Don who wanted to escape with a woman before.
Yes.
And now here we have this Day who's like, and you know, it could just be him waxing on a dream here. He might not really mean it, but I don't know, he seemed pretty genuine to me, that he really liked to move away with her.
Yeah, no, I thought I remembered in the first episode somebody referred, or Dusk refers to Song as Day's drug dealer. So that might have been where the relationship started. So there's a pragmatic aspect to it. But no, I agree. She certainly seems to play an important part in his life. I think there's one more bit that I wanted to say. I can't remember where we learned this, that song comes from a planet called Mycogen. You mentioned that already.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, I did mention.
Yeah, okay. So I just wanted to say, in the books, that is the name of a food-producing sector on Trantor.
Oh.
So already we have the association of, you know, supplying something, nourishment, food, whatever. It also happened, as I found out when I looked it up, to be the name of in real life food company, food production company that got swallowed up by a larger company a while back.
Huh.
But it reminded me, in fact, I thought it was the word mycelium at first. So that got me thinking about, of course, mushrooms, because mycelium are the network of fibers that support mushrooms, which grow underground. So interesting associations of food, underground networks, and things that spring up unexpectedly. So I don't know.
I can only think of The Last of Us when you talk about underground fungal networks. That's just...
Fair enough. I've never seen it, so...
It's been ruined for me.
The powers of association. Anyway, let's go on to the mule.
The mule. On Kalgan, the mule enjoys the spoils of war. He greets Skylet, also known as Little Bread Roll, the daughter of Kalgan's late ruler. The mule compels her to hold a gun to her head and implicates one of the bystanders in giving the final countdown, demonstrating that he only needs to control key players, not whole populations. I thought this was a brilliantly done scene. More than anything! I thought that was great, right?
It was brilliantly done. It was absolutely horrible.
I mean, but that's utterly what you need, horrific. Right?
Well,
can't all
again,
be sunshine, or if there's no conflict, what are we going to do here?
I'm not saying that, John. Don't overstate my case here.
I know. I'm strawmanning your argument a little bit here.
Yeah, well, take your straw man outside and turn it into mulch, okay? I recognize it's very difficult to convey the concept of mental control in a visual medium.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to come up with other ways. And I do like the point that he says something to the effect of he doesn't really have the ability. It's tiring. It's expenditure of energy for him to try and control whole populations. And so as long as he converts key figures, then the rest of that can kind of come along. Not dissimilar to some of the stuff we see in the books.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of psychological violence that got enacted there, really gratuitous, and using the viewer's own mind to project the bloody horrors that in this case don't actually occur, but could. And in some ways, that's even more terrifying because you become your own jailer, as you were mentioning a little bit earlier. You become your own, you generate your own fear all the time. And it's very dramatic. There's no doubt about that. And it certainly is a form of mind control.
I mean, it was horrific to see the girl say more than anything. So
again,
so robotically
and again
and mechanically joyfully, you know, just upbeat mechanically. I thought first of all, amazing performance, you know, child
actors, they're
sometimes. Sometimes not the best part of the cast, but this one did a great job. I don't have her name in front of me, but a fantastic job. And I really enjoyed the person on the sidelines, one of the soldiers.
Yes.
Who he made say three, right? One, two, three. And she can't even believe she would have said it.
Right.
And that's what I thought was the really moving part of it, because they were focusing on her a lot. I was like, why are they focusing on her?
Now we
What's she going to do? I had a feeling he was going to do something like that with her, but I didn't know exactly what. And the performance really sold it. This like shock at her own actions.
It did. It absolutely did. Which again is all the more devastating because you've lost your personal agency. She in and of herself would never have done that or said that.
Yeah.
But something else inside her overpowered her own agency and made her say something that was abhorrent to her. So yeah, these demonstrations are incredibly vivid. There's no doubt about it. And convey in very stark and unmistakable terms what he can and can't do. Although we haven't really seen what he can't do yet, I suppose.
Man, I am loving this villain. I know that you're a little skeptical of some of his actions. I mean, I think he's a terrible person, but I think he's fascinating to watch.
Well, I did read an interview with him, or maybe I watched it. I can't remember which. And he does have, no, it was an article. He does have a sense in his own mind of who this character is and part of his motivation and so forth. So there's more to him than just what we've seen so far. Mm-hmm. And I won't say anymore because, you know, some people just don't want to be spoiled at all. So apologies if you feel like I've already spoiled it. But I am looking forward to seeing what more he does and how those other aspects get portrayed, to what extent they do get portrayed.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see more of the Mule. We're only a fifth through the season, so I'm sure there's plenty more to come. We know next episode we're likely to go to this party with the Mallows. And I'm ready to get marshmallowy with it. Let's get head on to the Mallows.
I was gonna say, unless it's the herb marshmallow, which is good for the digestive. Just saying.
The Mallows on Kalgan. Torin Mallow and his new wife Beta enjoy their honeymoon. They are interrupted by Han Pritchard, who implores them to infiltrate the Mule's upcoming party. Pritchard is using the traitors to give cover to the Foundation. And I love their little AI sweetheart. And there was kind of a who's on first bit with it, right? Like, sweetheart, what?
Is, yeah, you know? Right. Which one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Once again, this is a nice nod to the books, having Hobar Mallow's descendants establish the Alliance of Traitors, which is what happened. And of course, them having thoughtbacks to the original, to Hobar Mallow, and also to Brother Constant, because clearly there was a child.
Right. Oh, yeah. Them, yeah. The descendants of Hobar Mallow. Lovely. Boom, you got him.
Lovely. Yeah. And that the current Mallow, his name is Torin, I wasn't sure if it was, but his uncle is also one of the traitors, which is also per the books. So that's nice.
Yeah, and I just got up to their introduction in the books, actually, like a little while before we recorded this.
Okay.
And Beta's very different.
Yes.
I mean, Asimov's 1950s patriarchy is showing through with the description of Beta and whatnot. Like, oh, if I tell you you're right, will you cook dinner? Of course. It's, you know, it's very like, okay, well, all right.
Keep going. She's gonna surprise you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Enough said. I mean,
she's already showed a lot of agency in the couple chapters that I've read with her.
Exactly.
Even with that agency, she's still colored by Isaac Asimov's, you know, biases. It's very interesting.
Well, how could she not be?
Right. You know?
Right. And it is, she's a foundationer in the books. It's never really clear to me if she is also a foundationer here. But there, the resemblance comes to an abrupt halt. These are party kids interested in sybaritic pleasures, and they don't really seem to be terribly concerned about the Mule and what he's doing. Unless they're putting on a stupendous act. But, you know, why put on an act when you're by yourself with your robot, you know?
No, I think they're going to have a similar journey to their ancestor, Hober, whereas they're kind of forced to care.
Yes, I think
Joe
so
Hober,
too.
You know?
Yeah. And it's interesting that they've gotten invited to one of the Mule's parties. You know, I'm wondering why.
Well, it sounds like the Mule wants to, you know, there are people in our real world who we know, a lot of what they want is to just be respected by what they see as their peers, who
the
don't see
society.
Them as their peers, right?
I suppose.
There's that whole thing, like, you can't buy class, right? Like, and
yeah,
here
well, a
we
lot
have
of people
the
try,
Mule. He wants to be accepted as the legitimate ruler now, right? He doesn't want to have to force a whole aristocracy to accept him. He wants anybody with money, anybody with influence to come here and you know, kiss the ring.
Yeah. Okay, I can't say any more about the difference between this and the books, but
and I hope he cleaned the ring. My God.
Jeez. Ick. And having Han Pritchard arrive here is very interesting in the manner and the way it happens. So, again, familiar faces, familiar themes, and so forth, and I'm liking them. And because of the changes they've already made, I'm enjoying watching how this retelling of the story works in so many details, but also given the changes, how they're going to, you know, arrive at the same end of the arc as the books do. Or maybe they won't. Who knows? Who knows?
I could see them going on. I mean, they already have diverged quite a lot. So
yeah,
I'm totally fine. I'm not tied to these books at all, but the show.
I know. You haven't lived with them for several decades.
I know, but...
Like some of us.
I just mean, I think this is, you know, it took me a while to let go of the Wheel of Time show, you know, diverging from the books.
I'm sure it did.
And that diverges quite a lot less. You know, this is... But from the beginning, I think the show has been honest with us in the fact that it is not a retelling, but a reimagining.
Oh, yeah. No.
So that's why I am much less attached to this one than I am in a lot of other adaptations.
And I'm content with that. And it's also interesting to see, again, the change over time. How did Asimov convey Beta's agency? How will the show convey Beta's agency?
Mm-hmm.
And how will that reflect the gender relations of the times?
Right. Right. Yeah, this will be a really interesting plotline. There's not a lot to say here. It's just very charming couple here, you know, just right off on their honeymoon. I think that's when I like that they were like, oh, it's an old custom honeymooning. It's
yes, it's exactly.
Yeah,
we even got married. Yes, we know it's not many do it anymore, but what?
Yeah, ready to wrap up the episode with Foundation and Empire.
Let's do it.
See what I did there.
Oh, yeah, I did.
I named it after the book, this section.
I appreciated your nod.
So Dusk arrives to prepare for Dawn's ascension, as he will be acting in place of Day. He gives Dawn words of encouragement and promises him a gift. It is a gift. Dusk sees to the preparation of that gift, the Navacula, a black hole bomb, which can kill a planet. Dawn and Dusk meet with Foundation Ambassador Quent for drinks, except Dawn isn't a drinker. Dawn expresses concern about the mule. Dusk assures him that he'll be prepared. Quent pushes Dawn, who says he is concerned about people like the mule with abilities. Dawn locks himself in a room and opens a comlink to Gale, who says, "It's time to make yourself useful, Empire."
Bum, bum, bum.
Oh, man. So, first of all, it's the Death Star. I think we can just move on from that.
And I was very disappointed in that. You know?
Yeah, I would have liked something more creative. I guess there could still be something interesting with it, because this quote stuck with me. You know, Dusk asks, is that everything gone? And he said, nothing is gone. It remains, but forever changed.
Yeah, I noticed you brought that up, and it is a good thing to remember. I also felt there was more than a shade of the Oppenheimer syndrome in that technician was describing the whole thing to Dusk. I mean, shades of the A-bomb, right?
It's a deterrent. No one ever uses deterrents.
But I think I'm right in saying that I'm confused, because the Invictus was mentioned very early on in the beginning. Did he say that they found the old Invictus and they used its black hole technology to create this new black hole creator?
I didn't fully follow the tech here, to be honest with you.
I think that's true, but listeners, please write in and clarify for us if you are so inclined.
And it circles the beast, right? Why? I mean, there was a lot of poetic language here that made the science very wibbly-wobbly to me.
Well, actually, you're right. That is a good cover for wibbly-wobbly, isn't it? But again, that was what led me to think Oppenheimer, and oh, it's beautiful. What's his name in Rogue One says when he finally sees the Death Star effects coming towards him. He says, oh.
No, Saw?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
No, not Saw. The guy who oversaw the entire project.
Oh, Krennic.
Krennic, thank you. Krennic.
Yeah.
Yeah, this whole thing about Empire and Foundation making nice with each other is quite interesting.
That is really interesting. I have no idea what's going to come from it. This is the kind of plot cliffhanger that I really like, is because
exactly
that tells me exactly what's happening, but not exactly how it's going to happen. And that's a really interesting,
right.
It's again, game changers versus cliffhangers. That's a game changer to have Empire and Second Foundation working together.
Yes, and so covertly too. Mm-hmm. I mean, to end with that whole thing.
Right.
Quite the jarring connection. Although Quint, I think, has some suspicion.
Yeah.
Because she says, gosh, you know a lot of things. I'm not altogether certain how you know them, particularly since the Foundation doesn't know them.
But Dusk also knows them, and I don't think Dusk is involved in this partnership, so I have no idea.
I don't think Dusk knows about the communication with
Right. Dale. Right. Yeah, I have no idea how Dusk has his sources. Who knows? I will say,
yeah.
Dusk lurking in the corner going, oh, you'll be prepared, is a little bit too supervillainy for me. Like, I was
yeah.
like, Quint, turn around, look this guy in the eye and be like, all right, what's going on, buddy?
Seriously. It did sound very vengeful, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, oh, you'll be prepared. Like, it was even like in a supervillain tone. He should have a white cat that he's just stroking. A white fluffy cat.
Yes. Poor white cats. They get a bad rep.
The white cats, the black cats. You gotta be something in between.
Yes. A mixture is always best. But so, what's interesting again about the whole Death Star plot,
mm-hmm.
Dusk insists that Demerzel knows nothing about it. I would be profoundly surprised if that's true.
Agreed.
But, he put it out there, so we can say, all right, fine.
Demerzel might not let him know that she knows anything about it, but that doesn't mean she knows nothing about it.
Of course she doesn't, wouldn't. You don't show your whole entire hand. Until it's time to lay down cards. I wondered if it was the ominous example of Day that led to Dawn deciding not to drink.
Hmm. That could be. I mean,
look what it led to, right?
I have family members whose parents were alcoholics and would not touch a drop of alcohol their whole life.
Yeah, well.
And the trauma does do something to you.
I can attest from personal experience, it does. Mm-hmm. I will still drink on occasion, but, only celebratory.
Yeah.
A couple times a year.
Yeah.
So it has an effect. It definitely has an effect.
Yeah.
And maybe that's part of why I feel more, not simpatico exactly with him, but feel that he might have a little bit more empathy.
Okay.
Than we think.
But is that empathy surprising. There or is that guarding yourself?
It could be self-preservation too. I get it. But. Anyway, I also was fascinated that he's following Seldon's teachings.
Yeah. Yeah, and that he kind of calls out Quint, right? He goes, are you even following Seldon's teachings?
Yes.
And I don't know if I bought her defense, right? Like, oh, I've given up everything.
Either.
She has a very nice life over here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was it was more, the lady doth protest too much in that particular response. Has he been following Seldon's teachings or has he been following Gale and her interpretation of Seldon's teachings and her understanding of the plan and, the mule tail at the end of the Prime Radiant, showing the end of the plan and all of those things. I mean, that ending left a lot of questions, dangling with sparks flying at the end, if you'll let me use that imagery.
Right.
And it also injects a small amount from the other books in the series.
Yeah. I don't know how deep we should go into these. Perhaps we should, maybe we should save them for like a spoiler section we could do in the finale where we talk about the books for listeners, if you want to mark these and put these later. but maybe mention the books that it's pulling from.
Yeah, I was just going to say that readers of Prelude to Foundation and Forward the Foundation will definitely know what I'm talking about here. And it's fun. It's fun. You can see how they're drawing from the entire series and taking things out and to some degree repurposing them and dropping them in.
Right, right.
I
mean, they definitely took
new functions.
Yeah, I mean, I just read the whole Belrio section in the books and the way they reorganize that in the show is almost unrecognizable, and yet still tells a similar story.
It gets you to the next level. I will be honest and say I liked the whole Belrio plot from the series better.
Yeah.
than from the original book.
Yeah, it was less hand wavy. I agree.
It was less hand wavy. It was more personal. You really got into them. It was much more character driven.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of lose the echo of the Roman Empire, the mm-hmm. Roman emperors, and their generals, which is what Asimov was drawing from.
Right.
Oh, and also that scene where Day was drinking and drugging with his generals. Again, very Nero, like, you know, slumming with the guys or whatever, even as he felt that these were his best friends in the world.
Right.
Because their whole commitment was to, you know, keeping him alive. Not that that's a big problem if you happen to be a Cleonic clone, as we've seen demonstrated more than once.
Right.
But, and as you said, you know, Day showing a bit of empathy. You know, so sorry that I can't do anything for your daughter. You know, good stuff.
Yeah. Well, any other thoughts on this episode before we wrap it up?
I liked it. I liked it. It was good. It left us with some interesting questions, some possibilities. And I certainly have faith in them still that they're going to bring this off. And I accept the mule as they have created him as being more fitting with the story that they're doing here. I don't have to like it, but, you know, it's cool. And they're certainly making good use of what they have created.
Yeah, I'm 2 for 2 on great episodes by my ranking.
Okay.
And I am very excited to see what episode 3 brings. So
me too.
I will see you then, Marilyn, for episode 3.
Yes, indeed.
For now, let's talk about what else is going on the network. We'll wrap it up, Murderbot, or we did wrap up Murderbot last week by the time you listened to this. And so go check that out. If you're enjoying Foundation, you already have Apple TV Plus, go back and watch Murderbot. We're really hoping it gets renewed because it was a really fun season. And it told a really heartwarming story. Marilyn, I think you would actually like it. It's not actually as much violence as you would think for a show of that title.
No, you said that to me before. And, and I certainly do have the intention of following up on that. But John, forgive me, I haven't even finished Doctor Who yet. So yeah, I'm just not going to add one more series to my life now.
If I could give you a pitch on that note, they're about 20-minute episodes. They are
No, you said that, quicker, yeah.
But anyway, everybody should go check that out. If you're liking the Apple TV sci-fi stuff, go check that out. We had full coverage on there with me and Alicia. Alicia also just did Ironheart with Jean, and they seem to really like it. I think that you will be very pleased with both the show and the coverage if you check that out. I know David has Alien Earth coming whenever that premieres. Alicia's gonna have Peacemaker in the fall. And we got a lot of other stuff coming up. I think we're gonna do Spaceballs soon. Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money.
But just please do Galaxy Quest. Please do Galaxy Quest.
All right. I'll think about it.
It's Bob's and one of our favorite comedic films.
Okay.
It's just excellent.
For you,
it's
Marilyn.
So many good all right. Actors.
All right. Aww. I'll commit.
Okay.
Check out Second Breakfast this month. It's going to be on Tacos, and Elevensies is going to be on one of the Val Kilmer movies that Alicia picked. And if you're a subscriber, go vote on that right now. Actually, it's probably over by the time you're hearing this. So don't vote on it anymore. Just listen to it when it comes out. All right. And check out our affiliates. Currently active are Properly Howard Movie Review with their Bacon Wrapped Kevin Bacon series. They're having a lot of fun. They just did one on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I was listening. Very, very, very funny.
Oh, really? The movie?
I think on the movie. Yeah.
Oh. I should definitely make sure.
And neither of them watch the show.
Well, that's interesting. Okay.
You should listen to it.
I'm reminded of people who rant on about books that they never read. But anyway, moving on.
Definitely also check out Never Mind the Music, weekly coverage with Psychology and Music. Beautiful coverage over there. And check out Wolf Shift Dust is started on their Dune series. Alicia is leading you through the first Dune novel. So go and listen to that wherever you get your podcasts. You can also catch up on Rings and Rituals if you want more Marilyn. Covering Rings of Power, rather. That's the name of the series. Season 1 with Dr. Sarah Brown.
Yes. And we will be doing season 2 probably midway through 2026, timed in order to lead right up to the opening of season 3.
Very good. Very good. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
and Radioactive Rambling doing their Fallout coverage leading up to season 2 of Fallout in December. I think it's coming out. And lastly, the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast. I know Alicia has stuff coming up soon with New Republic stuff. So make sure you stay subscribed and keep an eye on that feed. For now, I want to thank our Discord server boosters, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doof71, Athena A., Tina Lestu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition, and Radioactive Richard, and our lore masters, Sam Martian, Michael G., Michelle E., Brian E., SC, Peter OH, Adam S., Nancy M., Doof71, Brian8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Matthew M., Sarah M., Andra B., Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Deli V., Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W., Lestu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Neil F., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., Julia F., Kali S., Ilmariel, /Tim, Paul K., Bobby C., and Adrian. Thank you, everyone, for all your support. Marilyn, I'll see you on the next transmission, secret transmission between Empire and Second Foundation.
I can't wait.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals, only at Smoothie King.